When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's it, everybody. We are back, and this is the HTML All the Things Podcast. This episode is titled, maybe working title, Beware of Vendor Lock-In. So this was actually inspired by a LinkedIn post by friend and guest of the show, recent guest of the show, Kyle Techsquid, where he was talking about vendor lock-in on LinkedIn. I made a comment on that, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to kind of, you know, research the topic and talk about it, because it is something that, you know, absolutely is, you know, a critical thing to think about if you're trying to be proactive rather than reactive. So if this sounds interesting to you and you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon, leave a review or rating on your podcast app, join us in our Discord server, or share this with your friends. And remember that we also have a Scrimba affiliate link if you want to learn with their interactive media player code editor. Go check that out. The link will be in the show notes and also in the show description. So what is vendor lock-in? So we'll kind of start there, and then we'll talk about the pros and cons of vendor lock-in, because vendor lock-in is always presented, or at least usually presented, in a way that is like, vendor lock-in is really bad, or it's really bad, and it is bad, but it's also good sometimes, and we'll get into that. So what is vendor lock-in? And this is a direct quote from a Soulflare article, and it reads, vendor lock-in refers to a situation where the cost of switching to a different vendor is so high that the customer is essentially stuck on the original vendor. Because of financial pressures, an insufficient workforce, or the need to avoid interruptions to business operations, the customer is locked in to what may be an inferior product or service. And then I also found on another website, I believe it's called Alakai, these links will be in the show notes as well, and I have a couple other quotes from them. And one of them reads, if a front end is vendor locked in, it means that the technology or framework used to build it is owned and controlled by a single vendor, and it may be difficult or expensive to switch to another technology or framework without significant cost or effort. This can create several potential issues for businesses or developers. And a second quote from them is, to avoid these issues, it is generally recommended to use open source technologies and frameworks that are not tied to a specific vendor. So these definitions really sound as though vendor lock-in is really bad. And vendor lock-in is bad, but only when it goes bad. It's a weird sort of thing, because if you think about it, and I'm just going to touch on this now and expand on it later, but if you think about it, there's a reason why we fall for vendor lock-in. There's a reason why we go, hey, like that, you know, enter website builder name here. That looks great. That's a great deal. I'm going to go over there and do that. There's a lot of business decisions that go into it. Some of it is, you know, sort of being reckless and going too fast and being more reactive than proactive. Just being like, I need a thing now. I'm going to go with the fastest solution right now. And then in a year, you're like, oh my God, we have to migrate. We can't afford it. What do we do? And it's a big mess. So I have another section here I want to talk about, which is why we fall for vendor lock-in. And it's not all bad, to be clear. So the first one here is they will offer, so these vendors or these platforms will offer great onboarding promotions. So things like, hey man, you know, come on over here. We'll migrate it for you. That's a classic one. We'll migrate it for you from your other platform or whatever. We'll do all the heavy lifting, and then you can use, you know, our site builder. A common one is, hey, I'm coming from WordPress and I want to go to a no-code platform, maybe like a WordPress or something. And there may be tools that are like, hey, you know, export all your blog posts that you have and then import those into the Webflow CMS. And this is how you do it and all these things. And look, it's like you get a website builder, the potential to upgrade to e-commerce, the potential to add all these things, and it, you know, use our easy-to-use builder, and it's all great. That is one reason why we fall for vendor lock-in, is because sometimes these promotions are not only, you know, great promotions by like a cost and efficiency standard, but also great because maybe your business isn't doing too well. you're paying for multiple hosts and you're dealing with a bunch of stuff and you have a bunch of developers, moving to something like a no-code platform may seem very enticing. And so you get onboarded at this great rate that you can afford. And it's possible that it could save your business, but it's also possible that you will get locked in and end up getting screwed over. And again, we will explore all of this as we proceed with the episode.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around a little bit of a vendor lock-in and trying to figure out like what isn't locked in, what is locked in. And I want to have that conversation, I think. What is vendor lock-in? Because we just talked about it and you just explained like the whole WordPress to Webflow situation as well, and vice versa maybe. But like almost any technology that you're using outside of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, like if we're talking web development specifically, can have vendor lock-in, right? Like even if it's not like a vendor in the traditional sense of a company like Squarespace, a vendor could be React in a certain situation, right? Like if you're choosing React as a framework and then you want to convert that to Svelte, you're not locked in technically, but the effort to go from one to the other is significant, right? Like, and it's the same thing with almost any of these. Like, I'm just thinking like the grades of locking, because I took a quick look as well as Squarespace's export documentation, and they have like, these are the things we allow you to export. These are the things we don't allow you to export. So there's like, they're trying to like make it so that you are able to export some of your data and some of your layouts and stuff like that, but you can't export the really intricate data. And I think that's where it becomes a more in-depth decision as you're going at it. You shouldn't be afraid of vendor lock-in, in my opinion. And we'll talk about that a little bit later with like the good and the bad and the side effects of it. But the more you use a service, this is how I'm going to define it for myself. The more you use a service, a platform, the harder it will be to go to something else, regardless of what that service is. So even if it's something that is technically not vendor locked in and you're able to export the data in CSVs and XML files and JSON files, whatever, right? Like you're able to export all the CMS data, you're able to export all of the layouts separately, you're able to export everything. Like let's say everything is exportable. The more you've used it, the harder it will be for you to transfer that data into something else, regardless of how exportable it is. So when you're choosing something that, and you want to avoid vendor lock-in, I think that is a misguided approach to the problem. It's more like, hey, what are the chances we'll want to switch? And is that choice going to affect our chances? Like if I'm going to go all in on a service that isn't tested, like a brand new version of WordPress, that's not called WordPress, that's something else, right? But has all the features of WordPress and great, all that. And you want to stake your entire business's reputation on that service. That's the risk factor of vendor lock-in. Whereas something like WordPress that's fully tested, sure, WordPress is technically vendor locked in. Like there are a lot of things in WordPress that are hard to export out. Or even if you export out, it's hard to import in to other platforms. But the reality is that it's already tried true and tested, just like a React or something like that. And your transition isn't like forced because the service is going to shut down. Like there's no way WordPress as an open source, you know, content management system and page builder is going to shut down ever, right? Like in the next 10, 20, 30 years. So that those are the kinds of things like, and we'll talk about it a little bit deeper, but I just wanted to kind of get my thoughts on the table on what vendor lock-in is and how I can process it in my head, because I definitely make these choices pretty consistently when I choose a technology to make sure that we're not putting all our eggs into one basket. And even though I know it's going to be a pain to get out of it, I need to have that awareness when I'm going through and like choosing a database or a page builder or whatever.
You're right in that there's always sort of a bit of a vendor lock-in. Like even if we talk about HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, I mean, this would be a massive upset if it were to happen. But if some browser says, I'm not doing that anymore, I'm using this other language, and that's how I'm going to render sites, and that browser gets a whole bunch of use case, I mean, hey, look at that. The market just changed and everyone's going to have to leave HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, or diversify and have some HTML, CSS, JS developers, and then have whatever this new language developer is. Because we're not starting from scratch. We're no longer like setting little bits on a chip, you know, from a hardware level. We're building upon things that have been built upon years and years and years, right? I mean, even if you're a desktop developer, you're developing for Windows, for example. I mean, Windows isn't exactly Windows version 1 right now. And also, if you're a Windows app developer, how easily are you going to be able to transition if Windows were to disappear, or if Windows were to just change up a lot and things like that. And so, you know, vendor lock-in, you know, sort of is always a risk. It almost feels like the whole like job security thing argument, where people are like, I want job security. And then other people will argue, well, there is no job security. You can just sort of like make smart decisions. And that's sort of where vendor lock-in, you know, kind of ends up falling in, where there's blatant vendor lock-in, where there's decisions where it's like, hey, you know, there is a risk. There's an inherent risk here of you getting stuck on this platform. But there's also, you know, always a little bit of, uh-oh, like this could happen. Uh-oh, this could happen type of thing. And it's the what ifs that could, you know, plague you if you really didn't kind of dig into this type of stuff a bit too much. Because like I'm going to talk about later, but you know, there's vendor lock-in in WordPress. I mean, you could say, well, WordPress self-hosted is open source. Great. But if you're not the greatest coder, or you don't have the bandwidth or the money, which is the whole point of vendor lock-in, to develop a plugin, what if you're using a plugin in which there is no alternative, and all of a sudden that plugin gets taken down, or doesn't support your theme anymore, or something like that. Now you're locked in. You're locked into that plugin. You know, you don't think of it. You're like, I'm on an open source platform and I could code this. It's like, yeah, but you could have coded WordPress too. Like WordPress was coded by somebody. So it's this type of stuff. You could like kind of talk yourself in circles. Like obviously, you know, the Cloudflare article and this like Alokai article as well. They're talking about it just sort of like in the extreme case of like, oh, like you went in and you specifically bought us like a proprietary technology, and now you can't leave without, you know, a bunch of data entry and a bunch of other garbage. And so like now it's going to cost you, or it's going to bankrupt you, kind of thing. Another reason why we fall for vendor lock-in is the promise of a single piece of software that will solve all your problems. And this is, you know, potentially the case. I mean, how many people are locked into the Adobe ecosystem, the Creative Cloud, all that stuff, right? Where they're using Premiere and they're using all these other Adobe things like Photoshop and stuff. Like how many skills, how many hours of skill building have people done to learn Photoshop, to learn Premiere, to learn all these different things? I mean, I know how to edit audio in Audacity. Some of those skills, for example, are transferable. Like I'll know certain levels of compression. I'll know I need to do some compress, a EQ here, I need to levelate this, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. I need to noise reduce, put a noise gate there. I'll still have that knowledge, and it is transferable to an extent. But in terms of, let's say Audacity closes down right now and I, for some reason, can't use it at all. I mean, there might not be a podcast for a few weeks while I spin up, right? And that's the thing that'll kill you, because some businesses can't afford to effectively pay for that lost time. They'll just be like, I can't afford this. Like, I can't afford all this downtime. So that's it. Another reason why we fall for vendor lock-in is the consumerization of complicated topics. So, for example, how many people will build sites on a platform, say Squarespace or something like that, when they have a small business and they have no idea what vendor lock-in is? They just saw a commercial that said, come to enter site builder here. We have e-commerce. We have this, that. They go, great. I can't afford a developer. This thing is, you know, consumer friendly. It's a no-code tool. I'm going to run over there and build the website. And then that company, that site builder, gets bought out, raises the price too high or something like that. And they're going to feel the effect of vendor lock-in, but they're not thinking about it in this way. You know, they're running a small business. They're an accountant, or they're fixing cars, or they're pouring concrete, or whatever it is. Like, they're focused on their profession. They're not focused on specifically like what it is that they're using. Mike and I are locked into QuickBooks as an example. We're locked into QuickBooks. We've talked about, you know, oh, you know, could we switch and blah, blah, blah. And no, A, our accountant uses QuickBooks and it's cheaper for them to do so. And B, they have all our records from years now. So to transfer over, I mean, maybe that's easy for an accountant, but it's not easy for me. And I don't want to pay for that. So we're locked into QuickBooks. Now, I don't really have a problem with QuickBooks. I don't think that any other software is going to be, you know, the end all be all to QuickBooks. But if QuickBooks were to do something, you know, like raise the price to 8 times what it is and whatever, I mean, it would be a problem. Like, we would have a problem. That would be a bad day. It'd be, now what do we do? Do we like, you know, dig in? Do we hire a bookkeeper? What do we do? Like, it's going to be a change. We are locked into QuickBooks because we are not accountants, straight up. So that is absolutely one thing that, you know, like all of us are going to quote unquote fall for vendor lock-in to an extent.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm locked into Gmail.
Yeah.
Like why am I, I'm not transferring my services out of Gmail because it like it is essentially my hub for all of my email right now. I have other email accounts. I want to be clear. Like I have an Office 365 email for business and I have that, but my core one is Gmail. There's no way I'm switching to that. I think every company's goal is to lock you in, right? Like whether it be coding related tooling, or it is like a consumer facing application like QuickBooks or Gmail, their goal is to slowly bring you into their ecosystem and make it harder for you to leave. They don't announce this directly. Like they're not just like, we're trying to keep you in a trap garden. They usually have like laws on them that that force them to allow you to leave. I believe the EU has passed a bunch of laws. I believe even the US and Canada have some laws that force these massive corporations to make it possible for you to transfer your data. But they make it specifically difficult. And it goes back to the thing, like the more you use something, like we use QuickBooks like crazy for the last 8 years, the harder it is for us to transfer. Because now we're talking like 8 years worth of knowledge that we've gained and how to use QuickBooks, 8 years worth of information that we've input to QuickBooks, and then having to take all that and freaking adapt it for a new accounting software. Forget about it.
It's going to be a disaster. Like it took us forever to learn this. I'm still learning new things.
Yeah, exactly. And again, there is a lot of positives to this, and we're going to get into it. But like, it's something you need to be aware of as you're going through and making decisions from a technological perspective and maybe even a personal perspective as well. Because if you're choosing software that could potentially screw you over, and you can't ever know for sure, but if you have that like gut feeling of like, I don't know if this thing's going to last because X, Y, and Z, that's when the fear of vendor lock-in should be highest, right?
I mean, it's a very good point. I mean, it's because, you know, effectively with vendor lock-in, everyone's afraid of like a rug pull, more or less.
Yep.
A rug pull in a variety of ways that we will cover later. And it's just, it becomes like, you know, hey, like don't put your eggs in one basket. That's a classic one, right? Don't do everything, you know, with one company and whatever, but sometimes you need to. And like, that's why I wanted to talk about this like section is like, why do we fall forward? Is because sometimes it's good. Like, think about this. Like, let's say, the cost of building a website for a brand new small business is really high. Like you don't want to use a vendor. You want to go all custom code, all open source, all whatever, right? So just like a full custom job. But that is, chances are, is going to be more expensive at that moment than it is to go to another platform. Like if you're just trying to make a blog post, like a blog website, and you know, you go and get it custom coded, that is, chances are that it's going to be more expensive than it is to just go to a WordPress.com, which is their software offering, their service offering site, right? Or any other blogging platform out there, Medium, whatever, right? There's all these different ones. That's probably going to be a lot of money to get it custom coded. But you could just go to Webflow, or you could just go to WordPress.com, or you could just do whatever. Now think about this. So just if we kind of like reel this in, you're starting at zero blog posts. You have this idea, this sort of like business plan in your head or written down, but you have no idea how successful this thing is going to be. So this leans into what Mike was saying with our QuickBooks records for over 8 years. So this business, you start writing blog posts. You worked with a vendor. You chose a vendor. Let's say Webflow. You chose a vendor. You work with them. And 5 years down the road, you have 1,500 blog posts. You went from zero to 1,500, right? And now because you've seen this, you've gotten success, and maybe some of it was even unpredicted, you now have an e-commerce merch store, of which Webflow offers as an add-on. You can sign up for an e-commerce site and add an e-commerce store to your website, right? Well, now that we are not at zero posts, we're not at 10 posts, we're not at 100 posts, we're at 1,500, and we're selling things from their store. How difficult is it going to be to leave the vendor now? So now people would say, well, with Webflow, you know, there's some ways to migrate away, but let's just, for the sake of example, say there is not a way to migrate away without, you know, manually re-entering everything and sort of building from scratch. Let's say there is not a way to do it. And and people will say, you know, well, you kind of shot yourself in the foot here, like you're vendor locked. But here's the flip side. You saw all this success, but would you have gotten here if you spent all your startup capital on making something that was not vendor-based? Would you have made it this far, 1,500 blog posts, a successful website, a successful e-commerce store? Would you have gotten here if you had gone the custom code route? Now, some people will say, Well, you know, you didn't realize the cost of your decision in the beginning, that you should have eaten the cost in the beginning. And let's say the cost was $10,000 for a custom site to be developed. Okay, great. Well, down the line, moving this 1,500 post plus e-commerce store behemoth is now 30,000. So you could have saved, you know, 20,000 in difference there. But the thing is, once again, what if you were never going to be successful because you didn't work with the vendor in the first place? It's not just a one-to-one, like, quick answer, right? And this also leans on the fact that humans in general, a lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us will lack proactivity and we focus on reactivity. It's sort of that we need a site now and we got to go now. And at being a person that talks to customers on a regular basis about websites, if I try to explain to them either vendor lock-in or I try to explain to them, hey, you know, you have a site for right now, you don't like it, it's, you know, it's you've been building it for 5 years with this other company, it's been a mess, you don't like it, why don't we have a site, why don't we take this one slow? You know, we'll work on it, like, you know, constantly work, kind of like a slow is, like, move slow and, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast type thing. But now let's make a site that's nice for you, right? That you want and you don't have another mess. And they're like, nope, we got to go fast. Let's go now. Let's come on. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Come on. Come on. Come on. And it becomes this thing once again, where it's like, instead of being proactive and being like, I had a bad experience in the past and like, now I'd like to change that. And so I'm going to, like, you know, take Matt's advice in this case, because they've hired me. It's like, no, let's go fast. Let's go fast. And then they're unhappy with the new site too, because it went fast and we had to rush it and we didn't take our time. And it was like, why? You had another site that was working. Just keep that thing up and running. Let's take an extra month. Let's do it right. And then it's going to be a site that you've always wanted. And you're not going to be mad at it. And that's going to be it. And that's just not necessarily the case, because the business world moves fast, right? So those two kind of things come hand in hand, is like, could you have grown without the vendor? And also, you know, could you have convinced your boss or your customer to not go super fast and be like, my God, we need to, like, instead of saving an extra $2,000 over the next couple months and getting a more custom site coded up, they're like, no, we need to go now. We got to go Webflow. We got to go whatever. And they go panic and they just go nuts. And then now they're locked into a vendor potentially. So I want to talk about the side effects of vendor lock-in, because I know we've alluded to this over and over again. And the side effects of vendor lock-in are usually presented in a negative light, and many of them are negative. But I do want to talk about the good and the bad side effects of vendor lock-in. So we're going to start with the good, because it's probably more brief, to be honest. The first one is great pricing. So I've already talked about great onboarding promotions. Great pricing, you know, same type of thing, where you're looking at it and you're going, do I pay $10,000 for somebody to make me a custom site? Or do I pay, enter in website builder here, $30 a month to give me a website builder, an e-commerce platform, a CMS? The list goes on. So great pricing is absolutely a motivating factor of vendor lock-in. And there's a flip side to this in the bad section that we'll get to. The next, the good side effect, is ergonomic and efficient tooling. So we talked about the consumerization of complicated topics, like having people, they have no idea, having people that are, you know, concrete layers or something else that are completely not tech related is the point. They just don't know tech because that's not their profession. Fair enough. So they will look around, or maybe they'll see an ad on like, hey, get your small business started up. A classic one's QuickBooks, actually. Hey, don't handle your invoicing, you know, by calling some, you know, accountant. Don't handle your invoicing by writing it down on paper and then handing the person, forget the printers, forget all that. QuickBooks will take your invoice and you can upload your receipts to it and you can do your expenses and you can send your invoice and people can pay via credit card. And it's, you know, it's lovely and everyone will love it. That is ergonomic and efficient tooling. QuickBooks is ergonomic and efficient tooling. The best customer interactions we have in terms of payment specifically is when we send somebody an invoice with QuickBooks. This is not a joke, and this is not sponsored, and they just pay via credit card. And QuickBooks goes, okay, this is how much expense it was because there's a credit card handling fee. This is the invoice that it is checking off. So it automatically files that away, and it says, and we're sending it to your bank. And when you go to look at the bank record, it says, would you like to match these records up? And of course you would. You press match and it's over. and that's it. That is the smoothest interaction. There's no, oh, I got to get cash. Oh, I got to go get my Bitcoin or some crap. It's quite literally, they paid it. Like, I sent it to them digitally. They paid it and it's over. So these vendors are usually very ergonomic and they're very efficient. This is a good side effect of vendor lock-in, 100%. Also, this is a very kind of weird one that I thought of when I was writing this, and that is a lot of these tools have pre-built onboarding tools and training materials in the form of documentation and universities that they've set up, like Webflow University is their sort of documentation and training. Because if you really think about it, many of these tools will have like a team plan where it's like, oh, like a single plan, you know, it's this much money and this is what you get. You get to build three sites or you get to build two web apps or whatever. But you can add additional people to your account, making it a team account, right? So now if your business starts to grow, let's say you sign up for a vendor that offers web app building in some way. So you sign up for this web app builder, you're working away, your business starts to do well. You then go, oh, I got to hire Mike. You know, I got to hire Mike right now. I need an extra person. Oh, I got to upgrade. Here's the vendor getting their money. I got to upgrade to the team plan. Okay, great. Now the team plan's done. Fantastic. Now Mike is working for me and I need to onboard him. But I don't need to write the documentation. Mike can go and read the vendor's documentation. He can go to, if it was Webflow, Webflow University. He can go and learn how to use this tool without me getting involved at all. I just say, hey, make sure you focus on these five or six lessons that I didn't write. And now Mike has been onboarded, short of the HR stuff, by tools that someone else wrote, published, and upkeeps, hopefully. And keeps up to date. Like it's a no-brainer at that point. Like, look how quickly you're going to grow. And there's a lot of Webflow agencies out there that are just pure Webflow. They're web designers that don't know code too well. So they build on Webflow. They have an agency license or whatever Webflow calls it. Maybe they have a couple of designers on their team and they manage multiple businesses' websites and they charge. I think you can even bill through Webflow. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure you can. I don't do that. But I mean, that's crazy. Like that's, you know, all your entire employment potentially could be on Webflow or enter in another, you know, website builder here. There's tons that do this type of thing. So this is a great side effect of vendor lock-in. The second last one here is pure focus. No shopping around. You're locked in. Think about people that are in the Apple ecosystem. They've bought an iPad. They've bought an iPhone. They've bought a Mac. They're in it now. That's it, man. They're not looking around. The next thing they're looking for is the new iPhone. They're not looking at the Samsungs. They're not looking at smartwatches from Android. They're not doing any of that. They're looking at the Apple Watch. And then they'll maybe look at the Apple Watch Ultra. So they're locked in. And what that means for things like site builders and developers is they're going to get really, really, really good because they're just focused on one thing. And it kind of combats that jack of all trades sort of meme, if you will, where it's like web developers have to be jack of all trades. There's a little bit of networking, a little bit of coding, a little bit of this, etc. This kind of lock-in helps you avoid or mitigate the jack of all trades in some areas because you are mastering the platform that you're using. You're using this vendor's software and you're just constantly learning it and getting better and getting better and getting better. I've done this with Webflow because we have a couple of customers that love Webflow. So I work with them on there. And I've started getting that way with Elementor as well, because I work with a couple customers in Elementor. And so I'll be able to tell, not everything, of course, because there's a million and one, you know, situations that can arise, but I can tell you like, oh, that's possible in Webflow, you know, vanilla. Oh, that isn't. Things like that. So that's the good side of vendor lock-in. Now here's the bad. This is the thing that everyone focuses on, because I mean it's bad, but it is bad sometimes.
So before you get into the bad, I'm gonna have some hot takes here because in my opinion, overall, vendor lock-in is a good thing. So I don't think the bad outweighs the good in this situation because everything that Matt just said, and I'll explain my reasoning here. If you're a startup, you're trying to get in, you're trying to build an application, right? Or you're a company trying to break into an industry, whatever the case is. I don't think you should be focusing on what isn't vendor locked in because your goal is to prove your concept. Right. Your goal is to make sure that not the technology is the important part, but the actual concept that you're trying to prove. You're trying to sell, you know, swimming shorts. You're trying to, you know, create a to-do application, whatever. Like you're trying to prove that you belong in a sector of the industry. And to do that, you need all the things that Matt said above. You need to have that pure focus. You need to make sure that you can do things quickly. You need to have easy attainable like support and documentation and all that to be able to build quickly. What you don't need is to be able to fuss around with custom code solutions. You don't need to have 15 different developers working on your project, eating up your entire cash flow. You don't need the things that make it hard for stuff to be locked in, right? Like the less locked in it is, the more custom it has to be. That's just like the range, right? I've worked with no code tools that are trying to be as more available for you to export out into different technologies as they can. And the inevitability is they become way more complex and require way more knowledge and way more intricacy and more developers and all that just to use them, right? So this idea that like you need to focus on not being vendor locked in, especially when you're beginning, doesn't make sense. Not at all. If you can build something that works for 99% of use cases, right? Use whatever tool is available to you at that moment. It does not matter if it's locked in or not, because if you make it, if you prove your belong in that whatever sector you've chosen to belong in, regardless of what you chose before, you would have had to rebuild it anyway. I'm guaranteeing you this anyway. If you would have built it from scratch with just HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, right, to avoid vendor lock-in, I'm doing quotes, if you're at the point where you need to scale, you're going to be choosing different technology to scale. So the first part of your journey is always going to be different than the second part of your journey, almost guaranteed, if you make it. And that's the big if. Like, what's the point of even worrying about this vendor lock-in thing if the really big question that you have, that everyone should have when they're trying to get into a sector of the market, or they're trying to solve a solution or whatever, is proving that solution makes sense, right? So like, vendor lock-in is an important concept when you have an established product that you're trying to scale to X amount of users, and you've already proven your concept and you're proven your sector, or you're trying to make sure that it can last for 10 or 15 years. But the reality is that, like, who cares if your e-commerce store lasts for even 2 years if it can't sell a goddamn pair of swim trunks? Like, no one cares about your swim trunks. So like, now you've spent, you know, $50,000 building a custom e-commerce store that sells one pair of swim trunks every day. Great. Now you're not locked in, right? Like, no, like you could scale that thing up to sell a million swim trunks, but no one's buying them. So that's my take on vendor lock-in. I don't think it should be at the top of your concerns. But again, as you progress, as your company progresses, and if you're already working for an established company, that's when it becomes very important to think about.
Well, it also becomes a thing too, where if you're being super proactive, or you're being super reactive, then you probably don't have like an emergency fund. And I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, changing vendors is an emergency, although it can be if you get rug pulled, or if the vendor shuts down suddenly and you require their services. But it is something that, you know, I mean, if you're managing a business, like, I would hope that you have a little bit of dollars, you know, set aside, so that if you're like, hey, you know, we're scaling up, like Mike said, like, we're scaling up here, we have to switch, like, we have to do something about scaling. 100% having a little vanilla like HTML, CSS, and JS website is probably not going to cut it anymore. We're going to have to scale up. We're going to have load balancers and, you know, who knows what. Like, Rick, we can't use this shared hosting plan anymore. And then the technology used to build the site originally is so old, or, you know, maybe the design is old to the point where it's like, yeah, we're going to have to spend some money here. And like, it wasn't like having your website live is not a one and done cost. And I feel like a lot of customers, myself included, were like, I'll try to keep, like, try to preserve things and like make sure I, you know, assume and hope. Like, I'll be like, oh my God, I really hope that this is doing well. Like, I'll be like, for example, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to buy this computer and it better last me 12 years. And it's like, well, the chances of it lasting 12 years, like my last one did, you know, is low. And it's like, don't think of it like think about a little bit of longevity where, you know, you buy stats that are going to last a few years and be good for you. But at the same time, it's like, you could have breakdowns, you could have things like that. And you don't want to get bogged down in selecting the vendor. But at the same time, it's like, you better have, in my particular case, like, I better have some personal savings in case my computer dies, and then I can go and buy another computer. Whereas a lot of businesses, they won't have any sort of fund to switch vendors. And then that becomes like a major problem. Now, again, depending on how reliant you are on the vendor, though, maybe it's unfeasible to have that amount of money. Maybe you need to like double the value of your company. You'd have to have the entire value of your company in literally liquid in money in order to do that. And that's why vendor lock-in is so, you know, sort of shown in a negative light, and why people are so scared of it. And I'll get into that right now. So here's the bad side effects of vendor lock-in. First one here is a lack of flexibility, meaning you can't switch easily or add functionality that the platform lacks. So one thing that, you know, you don't have when you lock yourself into a plugin is, for example, on an Apple phone, I mean, a lot of the apps are, you're now using, you know, the Apple experience. And if Apple decides, hey, I don't want X app on the App Store, I mean, there it goes. And I know there's some stuff with third-party app stores that it's happening in the EU right now. But, you know, as it sits, at least here in Canada at the moment, is you have to get your iPhone apps from the App Store. And so the platform is ultimately selecting what you can and cannot do. I do not believe that you can change the default texting app. I don't quote me, but I don't believe you can do that on Apple either, on an iPhone either. That's a lack of flexibility. For a developer, the lack of flexibility could be like, I, you know, have all my visual elements controlled by, you know, the Wix CMS or the Squarespace CMS or the Webflow CMS. I have all my, you know, sort of visual thing. And if I migrate out, I'm just exporting, maybe I'm exporting my HTML, CSS, and JS if they'll let me, and then I'm exporting my written materials maybe into like a CSV or something like that. But then it's like, now I have to import that into something. Okay, well, what's the other CMS? Does that CMS have the same sort of visual controls where like if I have a toggle in the CMS that was like, you know, show ad, show, don't show ad, show call to action, don't show call to action, is all that going to work? So that's an example of lack of flexibility and not being able to switch easily. It's going to be a difficult switch in those cases. But I feel like many migrations are difficult. Like even just migrating WordPress from one host to another can be difficult. You can have major problems. One random PHP feature or one random PHP version isn't supported on one of the things and you didn't think of that, or the HD access isn't compatible. And there's a whole bunch of different things. And so like moving platforms is always difficult. The biggest problem is that if you need the flexibility for your business and you cannot have it, now, this is where you really should avoid vendor lock-in. And you should be like, hey, we are really relying on enter whatever here. We gotta be careful. An example with Mike and I is, you know, we're using the QuickBooks way of bookkeeping. We're using an accountant that does, you know, works with QuickBooks, of course. But if QuickBooks and the accountant disappeared, I mean, Mike and I can go to a bookkeeper and say, this is what happened. We've already filed, you know, our taxes according to the law for however many years and blah, blah, blah. And we need help moving forward. And like, that's just it. You know, like that's what we need. And so there is a way for Mike and I to leave. But if for some reason legally, the government of Canada was like, you can't leave. Like you can't, like once you choose an accounting software, you can't leave legally. Now QuickBooks is the person that has all the power. And they're first of all, it's not flexible now. And then also, if they don't want to add new functionality, they don't have to. And if we need the new functionality, if Mike and I need it, we can't leave. And now we're in trouble. Now we're vendor locked. That's a really serious problem. The big one here is pricing changes. So this is what people really get scared of is that if you are susceptible to pricing changes, you know, sudden fee changes, sudden licensing changes can leave you bankrupt. You can be in some serious trouble. And it doesn't necessarily even need to be pricing changes because the platform changed the price of the tier you were in. It's entirely possible that you use the platform and without knowing, to the point where you actually upgraded a tier, you went to another tier higher, and it's at like the enterprise tier where it doesn't say the price on their website. It says, call us. Now you might have a problem because they might go, well, you were paying $400 a month before. And now it's 40,000 because you're at the enterprise tier. And you're like, well, I make 40K a year or 40,000, you know, a month. The whole business does. And it's like, yeah, but that's the price. You're using our software. That's the price. So you like, if this is where you can get into trouble, this is again, another reason why vendor lock is so scary is because people will go, you know, this could happen at any time. You know, and it, you know, it is possible if you become mega popular, you know, it's entirely possible that you could get rug pulled like this. And you could be like, I cannot afford this. I guess I'm either scaling back or I'm shutting down. It's just a full shutdown. Like it sucks, but like that's entirely possible. And this is probably the number one reason why people are so scared of vendor lock-in.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think like the pricing has bit so many people in the ass. Like a lot of times, you know, AWS isn't really a vendor lockable platform, but if you don't account for traffic spikes in your calculations for pricing, or you just don't do calculations, which I think a lot of people don't. And then they get a bill for $10,000 that doesn't even cover, you know, their business doesn't even cover 1% of that. Yeah, that could sink your entire business model and your entire ability to scale and stuff like that. So it's very important that, yes, like I mentioned before, that vendor lock-in isn't super important when you're first starting out, but you should still be doing this kind of research of being like, okay, how much is this going to cost me if I have 1,000 users? How much is this going to cost me if I have 10,000 users, et cetera, et cetera. And then making the decision based on that, not making the decision based on like, okay, I don't want to pay a dollar for each user, right? Like maybe that makes sense in the grand scheme of things for you to get stuff, get it up and running. Cause you got to weigh the costs of the platforms that you're doing with the cost of doing something that's not vendor locked in. That's the tricky part, right? Like how much is it going to cost for developers to build this custom auth platform that I won't have to pay per user, right? Versus me getting one developer that does everything, including the auth, but uses a third party auth platform that's going to be like 10 cents per user, right? And then you weigh those things. Again, not easy. I'm not saying this is something that you can do in like, you know, an hour meeting. This is something where you just sit down and do some math. But it's something you absolutely need to be aware of when you're making a decision about the tech stack that you're using. Regardless of good or bad, you need to know the pricing of the stuff you're going to be using.
100%. And it is scary when there is like that enterprise tier. And it is scary, especially if you're starting to approach the enterprise tier and you're like, I do not know what these people are going to say to me. Like if we bump into this tier, it is a mystery. It is not listed on the site. You know, what are we going to do type thing? And I mean, it's the same thing happens even if the tier you're on, suddenly the license changes and it's like, hey, you were able to host an unlimited amount of domains, but not anymore. Now you have to pay per domain. It becomes like, uh-oh. And there was a big change with cPanel's licensing a number of years ago. And I can't remember the details there, but I remember hosting companies were getting kind of scared because it changed how things worked. And they had to change their tiers. Some of them migrated away to Plesk and stuff like that. It became like, it was a big story because like cPanel changed their licensing. So basically like the core of the, I suppose the money part of the business started to sort of evolve. And these people were like, what do we do? Like, what do we do here? You know, how do we handle this? And it's like, yeah, that's pretty scary. Like, you know, it's especially if you really rely on cPanel, like, yeah, like that's a little scary to have like something so crucial to be upended. And I don't know if there's an easy migration process to Plesk. I'd imagine that even if it is quote unquote easy, that it's not actually all that easy because these hosting companies are massive and they have probably a bunch of custom code and a bunch of custom infrastructure running. And so it's a, you know, that's a vendor lock-in problem that affected a lot of hosting companies, no doubt. And it was a huge story. And that leads into my next point here, which is you're relying on someone else's business. So you have to really kind of think of like, okay, my business relies on this other business. Okay. How much of my business relies on their business? Do you only have like one payment vendor, for example, like on e-commerce? Like if I, for example, if I have like WooCommerce and I hook up my PayPal to it, and for some reason, like something happens to my PayPal where it gets hacked and then PayPal, you know, sees some suspicious activity because of that and they ban my PayPal account, my entire e-commerce is shut down. You know, I'm in trouble now. We've had this problem with a client where it wasn't PayPal, but it was another payment platform that I won't name with WooCommerce. And it wasn't WooCommerce's fault. It was the payment platform. And they were having trouble processing certain types of credit cards, namely the most popular credit card in Canada. They were having trouble processing that in Canada. And it was a glitch that they did not realize they had. I had called them. I said, hey, I'm having this problem. And all I have controls over is I literally type in the API key, press test, and it works. Like this is a plugin. I don't have any access to this. Like I'm not touching this thing at all. And they were like, nope, we're not having any trouble. And then two or three weeks later, I randomly get contacted by them and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, like there was actually a problem processing these credit cards. And it's like that customer didn't need that e-commerce store, but what if they did? What if they desperately needed that income? Now we have a really serious problem because now their store is effectively closed. Think about it like literally like an actual real storefront. It's shut down. Like it's closed down. And how long can they live without that income, without that store being open? And that's ultimately the question here is, you know, how long will it take you to get another one online, another payment vendor in this example, if your current one goes down? How reliant are you on your payment vendor? This is a serious question. And I've tried to convince customers, get a couple of vendors in there, like get a PayPal and get something else like a Stripe or whatever, right? Get a couple of payment vendors in there so that if one goes down, you just turn it off on the site until they fix their stuff and people are still using PayPal. And if they contact you, you just say, oh, the other one's down. You know, please use PayPal for the moment while we deal with our other problems. So it is absolutely like a key thing that people just don't, you know, realize like, hey, like I'm relying on someone else's business a lot here. And it's hard to sort of dictate, or it's hard to balance, like Mike said, because we're all a little bit vendor locked. We're all working with other businesses. We're all relying on another business for some other reason, because businesses make things to basically like fill needs and wants, of course, right? Fix problems is the classic one. Fix problems. We have problems. We go to the businesses and, you know, the list goes on. And so this is relying on someone else's business is something that you really do need to take seriously and need to like be aware of, like, hey, I may need to migrate away from here. How difficult is it? Or maybe I need a backup. The last sort of negative in this side effect is feature obsolescence. So if the platform itself falls behind or doesn't wish to add the features that you need, your business may be affected. You know, your customers may demand that you, what would a common one be, like that you do shipping for free, or you build in the shipping in a certain way. And the payment vendor you're using says, no, I don't build in the shipping. It's always a separate cost and we don't calculate it until afterwards or something like that, right? And your customers are like, no, I want the shipping estimated now, you know, at checkout so that I can just pay you in full, pay for the shipping and pay for the product. This is, you know, absolutely something that, you know, could happen. And if the platform that you're using, if the vendor you're using doesn't want to add that feature, you might be extremely limited here. They may not have a custom code option, or they may not have enough custom code options to add that for yourself. And they may just be happy with where they're at. Because here's the thing, as Mike and I discussed this in the free tier episode recently, is that there comes a point where there's so many little random business cases out there that if you asked, like if a big platform like a Squarespace or a Wix or whatever went into a room of 1,000 people and said, what feature do you want us to add? A bunch of people would put their hands up, and let's say everyone did, you may get 700 unique features that people need for like some little niche thing. And so this random, you know, sort of shipping thing that you need in your e-commerce store that your vendor doesn't support, it may hurt your business because people may go, I'm just going to go to your competitor because I can pay all up front. I don't have this mystery shipping cost. So it may hurt your business, but then also leaving the vendor to go to another vendor that has the shipping calculator built in, that also hurts your business because now you're doing a migration. So this is another side effect of that vendor lock, is that, you know, feature obsolescence or just feature absence. It doesn't even necessarily need to be obsolescence. It is absolutely a big question mark, and it's not pleasant to deal with 100%. So just to kind of conclude the episode here, I have a few examples that I'd like to briefly go over. I have a WordPress example, a consumer example, websites as a service, and also free tiers. So I'm just going to kind of rip through these quickly. The first one here is WordPress plugins. So this is something that I think people don't really think of because, and I think I mentioned it earlier in the episode, is because if they're using self-hosted WordPress, you know, it's open source. They think whatever, like, oh, you know, I'm able to have the freedom to go to whatever host I want and blah, blah, blah. That's true. But are you the one that's doing the WordPress updates, meaning the actual core WordPress updates? And if WordPress did shut down and you were, you know, allowed via the license to continue developing WordPress, may I ask if you have the bandwidth and the money to support WordPress for yourself? Like you're going to be able to pay a developer enough to upgrade WordPress through security patches and different modern features as the web continues to evolve and move on. I mean, WordPress, I would assume, does not have one person working on it, right? And so people think, you know, like, oh, I'm on this open source platform, it's really good. It's like, it is a good first step, no doubt, for vendor lock-in. Absolutely. I'm able to leave this host, go over here. I'm able to get a developer to change some stuff, even in the core files, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the biggest problem here is this is a platform that you're using still. This is still effectively a vendor, and that vendor could shut down and now you're in trouble. Now, of course, WordPress supports a massive amount of websites on the internet. Chances of them shutting down, I would estimate, and that's just my kind of guess, is that they're fine. Like I haven't looked at their financial reports or anything, but I also haven't heard anything bad, right? So that's an example of you doing your due diligence, like Mike said earlier, and kind of being like, you know what? Like these guys power, you know, a considerable portion of the internet.
They power a lot of websites, and it's still actively developed. I think we're okay with working with WordPress, right? Probably a safe vendor to go with for most websites. Maybe it isn't for yours, but maybe it is for yours as well. You have to kind of go and weigh those pros and cons. But also, let's say you're fine with WordPress. You think, okay, that's great. WordPress has plugins, and WordPress plugins are oftentimes made by third-party developers. If you're using a plugin that has no alternatives, it's going to be difficult to migrate away from it. 100%. If you are using a plugin that's a specific, plugin for your theme. I mean, what's going to happen? Like if you need a slider and it's a slider plugin and that's the only slider that supports your theme, I mean, what's going to happen? Are you going to have to change themes? Well, now you're talking about theme obsolescence, in which the entire look of the website's going to change. That's a big migration. If you have no alternatives for your plugin, you are locked to the vendor of which is that plugin developer, 100%, because you're using their software. There's no alternative. Like, what do you do? And so it even inside of softwares, because our software ecosystems are growing, even these little internal systems is something to consider. You have to really kind of take a look and go like, I'm relying on this random plugin. Some of these random plugins are made by just one-off people where they had a need, they made a plugin, they updated it a few times and they leave. You absolutely need that plugin. Uh-oh, now what? They haven't updated it in 2 years. It doesn't work on my WordPress site anymore. It has a security flaw or something like that. Like, what do I do? And then many people will say, well, go get it custom coded. The whole point is here is that you may not be able to afford that. The next thing here, next example is consumer software. So this is actually from the Cloudflare link that I mentioned earlier and quoted earlier as well, but I thought it was an interesting one. And that is, and again, this is direct from the Cloudflare article, a real-world example of vendor lock-in is the way that Apple locked consumers into iTunes in the early days of the service, because music purchased via iTunes could only be played within the iTunes application or on an iPod. So this is a thing that, again, consumers are like, ooh, like I'm able to hook my iPod up, I'm able to listen to it on my computer, but they can't just take, at least at the time, they couldn't just take the files and put it on a generic MP3 player that was cheaper than an iPod, or play it in Windows Media Player if for some reason you wanted to do that. You couldn't do it. You were locked into the iTunes vendor. You were locked into the iTunes consumer software. Next thing here is Webflow, Squarespace, and Wix, and I've kind of made these or categorized these as websites as a service. These are things where you can absolutely get locked into. Like, for example, Webflow does allow you to export your code, but I mean, you're exporting some HTML, CSS, and maybe some JavaScript, but I mean, you still have to, move the servers around, deal with the registrar. You still have a lot of stuff to do with a migration. Also, if you're using the Webflow CMS, now it's like, okay, I can take my HTML files, my CSS and that, and I can maybe plug it into a headless CMS, but now I'm using a vendor probably for that headless CMS, or maybe I'm using WordPress as a headless CMS and I'm plugging it in. But I mean, you're still going to have to take all these sort of what I'm going to call generic HTML, CSS, and JS files, and you're going to have to make them work. So you're going to have like the layout, but you're going to have like the blog posts actually use that page template and, actually have a unique URL and those type of things. And then have you even considered SEO at that point where you have to, if you want to preserve your link equity, you have to have redirects or you have to use the same URL. And it's a mess. Like it's going to be a mess to migrate away from. So there are ways to migrate away. I've only used Squarespace and Wix a little bit, so I can't comment on how easy it is for them to leave. But like, I mean, there's a classic sort of thing where you can export your WordPress sort of posts, right? Like if you wrote a bunch of blog posts, you can export them into a file or like a CSV or something like that, and then import that into other CMSs. That's a way to migrate for sure. But I, like, as we all know, if you've done anything like this, is there's going to be little things you have to go in there and change. Like it's not just going to be, or at least like very rarely is it ever just going to be, click, click, boom. Okay. I'm good to go. Like that's, chances are that's just not going to be the case. And for good reason too. Like it's a difficult thing. You're migrating from vendor to vendor. You're moving a whole site. You're effectively picking up a house, leaving the foundations where it is and then slamming the house back down on some new foundations. I mean, there's probably going to be some cracks and some work to do and some water sealing and I'm not a contractor, so who knows what else you got to do, but it's not going to just be as simple as like pick up, drop. All right, cool. And then they just take off. I mean, is anything that simple? I mean, chances are no. And the last thing here, free tiers. So Mike and I touched on this before. and like a couple weekends or a couple weeks ago, I think a couple episodes ago. So you can go and check out that. I'll link that in the show notes. But, you know, if you build on a free tier, so maybe your database is on a free tier or whatever, and you don't ever assume that you that you'll need to pay for anything, you really have to think it through and think, you know, will this vendor have a free tier forever? And if you think that they won't, you better have some money ready to either pay for the new tier that you're on, which will be some sort of paid tier, or you better be ready for, you know, maybe even a rug pull where it's like they just say, hey, we can't afford this free tier, we're shutting down, you know, or whatever. Are you like, are you going to like build your business on a free service? I mean, it's great, right? Again, that's a great price. That's like one of those things, right? That's one of the good side effects of vendor lock-in. It's great pricing. Maybe it's efficient tooling and blah, blah, blah. It's, you can see your databases visually and it's super easy to manage them and whatever. But let's say they ran that free tier too long and they're going to go bankrupt. You know, you're done. Or they ran that free tier for so long, they realize, uh-oh, like people are starting to rely on us. We can't afford to pay for these server fees. We have to upgrade them to a plan. Here's the scary thing. Many web developers will use a free tier, but not just once. They'll use it for 100 websites that they've made. Now it's like, well, this is $10, but it's not $10. It's $10 times 100. So now it's $1,000. So now could you afford $1,000 a month? It's a dang good question, you know, and it is something that could affect you. Absolutely. It could sink you depending on how much money your business makes, especially if a lot of these websites are one-offs where you built the site, they paid you to build it, you put it up on some sort of free hosting service, you don't charge for the hosting service, you don't charge for maintenance. Now that customer is just like, they've paid you, like that is the money, the transaction has been consumed. Now all of a sudden that host becomes not free. And now you're going to have to call these customers, and a bunch of them are probably either not going to call, they're not going to remember who you are, maybe, depending on how long it's been, or maybe they're just going to outright refuse to pay. Now it's like, uh-oh, so like now do I pay for their hosting? And like, you know, it's going to get messy. And that's an example of vendor lock, where you got locked in at a free tier at a great price. One might argue the greatest price, which is free. And now what? Now, what are you going to do when you have to quite literally pay for it, or maybe you've been rug pulled? But that's it. That concludes this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it. I mean, thanks to Kyle. I just like randomly saw his post, like I said, on LinkedIn. And I was like, oh man, vendor lock, that's a cool thing to, you know, discuss. I added a comment there and I just was like, you know what? This would be a great thing to discuss on the show. So I hope that you enjoyed it. I will link to his LinkedIn post as well. In the show notes, you can go and check that out if you'd like. But before we end this episode, remember we are on Patreon. If you want to support episodes like this, that's patreon.com/HTML, all the things. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons, Tim from The Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com, Jason from Geek Life Radio via geekliferadio.com, Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com, Garrett Segal, Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com, and Joshua via silvio.us. Feel free to leave a comment or a review on the platform that you are listening to this on. And I forgot the rest of my end script. Forgot to say that we have a Scrimba affiliate link if you'd like to go and check that out. Remember that they have an interactive media player code editor where you can pause the lesson, go into the code and, you know, make, play around with it, break it, do whatever you want to do to really get your hands on to some coding learning and figure out what is going on with that code if you are confused. And we'd also like to give a shout out to Michael LaRocca, contributing author on htmlallthethings.com. Michael is the author of Self-Taught, the X Generation blog at selftaughttxg.com. So go check that out as well. And now you may feel free to leave a comment or a review in the platform that you're listening to this on. And this outro will sign us off.
You've been listening to HTML All the Things Podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings. And we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit us up on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things. And on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things. Signing off.